This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Looking forward to our first discussion on the Nats with Dave Jagler since the start of spring training. He got down to West Palm Beach over the weekend. We're going down as a show March 10th.
That's right.
Which is coming quickly. We'll be there for three radio shows and a lot of interviews with members of the staff and the players.
A little bit later than normal. We're usually down there really before games kind of get going. Like this last week, really, just as guys are getting going, getting the workouts in and stuff. So I'm looking forward to what that's going to be like, because we'll be broadcasting probably while they're playing some of these spring training games.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't know how that'll work in terms of our favor or not. The schedule will be difficult. But I know in the past we've had a pretty cool opportunity to sit there and actually watch the games from our broadcast booth set up at the ballpark. So that could be really, really cool.
Should be neat.
Depending on how things go when we're down there. But it'll be a lot of access and great information and guests for our listeners, which is going to be good for them as they get the tables set for the brand new Nats season. I just can't wait for the start of the year, which is a little over a month away, because they have done a good job on that first homestand of spreading out the championship celebration. Now, the Capitals did this well too, but largely in hockey, there is just kind of a banner ceremony. That's it. No rings aren't that big of a deal. You don't really think or see that necessarily like you do in baseball and football. They get those at like a party in the offseason. Baseball, there are three or four little days that are team-wide celebrations at the start of the year. And so the Nats have staggered those, where the first game at home is going to be the banner. I think the next day they get their rings. The day after that, it's all the individual awards and some of the postseason awards. So if you're going at any part of that first homestand to any of those games, you probably see some type of championship-related day. So you don't want that celebration to be completely over yet. Now, at some point, those guys, like Ryan Zimmerman I saw at West Palm Beach with Mike Rizzo, walked out with the trophy. And I thought, this has to be getting old for him a little bit now. I don't know if it ever does. I'm not really sure.
It's old, yeah.
But he like walks out with the trophy. He's probably done that now at 15 or 20 different events. They had another parade in West Palm Beach where they're on cars.
That's right.
They probably are having a lot of fun with it. I don't know if it gets old or not. But at some point, you just want to turn the page and focus on
this
year.
You do have to get down to business of actually playing baseball again. I mean, that does have to happen. I mean, the same way the Capitals were expected to show up for all 82 games the following year, despite the, you know, their most epic celebration. But yeah, I mean, it's a hard thing to do. I don't know the answer to it, by the way. I mean, we've always asked guys on the negative front, when do you turn the page from last year's disappointment to the following year? And everybody's got a different answer. Some people wear it the whole offseason, use it for motivation. Other people take a day and then never think about it again. It just depends on who you are. For this is uncharted territory. I'd want to remind – I print up business cards,
right,
even as a baseball player, that says 2019 World Series champion over the cheating Astros, Ryan Zimmerman. World Series champion over those SOBs, Max Scherzer. I
hand
them
out every time you go out to dinner.
Yeah.
We were talking about Dwayne Haskins. Before we move on, we can squeeze in a couple more calls. I just wanted to go back through his season really quickly before he hit the phones again, because I think it's easy now, this far removed in February, to forget. He didn't play in any of the first three games. And he was only active as the second quarterback rather than being the third quarterback, which he would have been, on September 29th against the Giants because of an injury to Colt McCoy. And in that game, Case Keenum was not able to finish the day. So Haskins came off the bench, very obviously was not prepared at all. 9 of 17, 107 yards, no touchdowns, three picks.
Yep.
Not all three picks were his fault, but the point is, it was a disastrous kind of sum of all fears NFL debut. Would you agree?
100%.
Couldn't have gone much worse. Some of that is probably just natural. It's your first action. You're coming off the bench in a situation where you didn't expect to play. But a lot of that leaked intel that we're talking about from people around the organization last year was he was not early in September and into the regular season, late August, what have you. preparing like you would have to if you were going to get on the field. So then, lo and behold, you actually do have to get on the field, and you're just not ready for the bright lights, and it looked that way. So then he goes back to the bench for three games, and he ended up coming off the bench against the Vikings in a 19-9 loss right before Halloween in October. And similarly, that did not go well at all. Not fair to him to grade him out on those performances. But then he had the benefit of a week to prep when he was named the starter going into the Buffalo Bills game. He was meh, but it was not nearly as big of a debacle. I think we came out of that going, okay, with a week to prepare, knowing he was the starter, with part of the playbook kind of thrown out, and then the part that he liked and was good at accentuated, he looked a little bit more big league ready. There were games that made you worry after that, but by the end of the season in December,
you saw improvement.
Weeks 15 and 16, you saw a guy who looked like an NFL starter. And I don't care if you are a Dwayne Haskins for MVP backer, or you're the biggest detractor in the world and you think he's going to be a bust. And how you would know either of those two things right now, I have no idea. But whatever camp you belong in, or if you're just kind of in the middle like the rest of us, waiting to see what happens, those last two games against the Eagles and against the Giants, neither great defensively, four touchdowns, no picks, completion percentages in the mid-70s, he looked like a completely different guy, and it gave hope to Redskins fans.
And rightfully so.
Watching those two games, I thought, maybe this could work.
This wasn't, again, the if you are going to pick, if you have to have bad performances and then good ones, at some point, you're going to pick bad early, good late.
Correct.
Because it's showing improvement. This is different than the flash in a pan rookie that looks like he's setting the world on fire, and then 3 weeks later he's benched for Nick Foles, thinking of Gardner Minshew, right? So the arrow is certainly trending up here. And this, by the way, you're still talking about such a small sample with a brand new coaching staff. There's no way to write a definitive book on what Dwayne Haskins is or will become. There were things that were bad data points, things that were great data points. And then there's, you know, in between eye of the beholder type stuff. The only point that I want to make here with this stuff in the offseason. Again, no football's been played.
What do you mean this stuff?
We're talking about Doug Williams and the comments.
And for people just jumping in their cars that missed the comment, I want to say what it was really quick. He said, and Tom, you could play this again, but he said he's trying to, Williams is, get him out of a mentality that Haskins feels like he can gallivant all over the place all offseason when he should be at work. And this is the quote Danny's referring to.
The games he played, you know, he played decently, but I think the last game of the season, the way he was playing that last game is the way we want to see Dwayne Haskins play this game, because he got talent. And he got hurt. He hurt his ankle, got rolled up, but he had thrown like two TD passes. He was like 12 for 15. And, you know, it gave you some hope that this is where he's going to start off. And since that time, the kid had been where he's supposed to be, I think, in the building, working out on his own, trying to find out what's going on. And like I told him and I talk, I tell him all the time, I'm not your coach. I just try to tell him what he has to do to get him out of that mentality that I can just gallivant all over the place on the off season, when really you need to be here trying to find out what I need to do for the season.
And so the only takeaway that I have from that is you only get one off season between year one and year two. You only get one off season where it's the first year of Scott Turner and Ron Rivera and everybody else that's brand new. You only get one crack at this, the same way you'll get one crack at your second year offseason, et cetera. And these are the only data points we have right now for what's happening. And the thing that's coming out isn't 100% glowing. Doug Williams says nice things in there, too, by the way. He complimented his play at the end of the season. He said he's in there doing what he needs to do now. But there was also the implication that I'm trying to get him to understand this is what has to happen. It can't just be part-time. It's got to be all the time. It's got to be a full-time commitment. And it sounds like he's trying to get him to buy into that, right? Because there's a degree of guys that are this talented. When you get to the highest levels of stuff, you've got natural ability that the rest of us couldn't dream of, right? So you've been able to get away with 85%, with 90%, with 75%. You could still be the fastest kid, right? At this level, everybody's there to eat you. Everyone's there who was all state, all world, all college football, all everything. They're all incredible. And the only way to beat them is to outwork them.
Let's go to Wendell in Springfield. Wendell, what do you make of those Williams comments?
You know, it's like, this is very concerning, honestly, to me. Because the thing I think he needs is reps. And I know he's not going to get in-game reps in off season. I get that. But I think his biggest knock is that he doesn't have the acclimated, I guess, play at the high level of quarterback and then as the starter of quarterback. And for him not to be, I guess, showing everybody like I'm here all in is kind of concerning. Like, I think that's very concerning.
I think that's how some people feel. There is a flip side of it, though, where I think you could just say Doug Williams, you know, says things all the time that we kind of dismiss and say, I don't know about that. But my point would be it's not just Doug Williams. This is the latest comment. Chris is in Hyattsville on G&D. What's up, Chris?
Hey, Grant and Dave. Do you remember the time that the Nationals beat those stinking cheaters, the Houston Astros, in the World Series?
I do recall that.
That
yes.
was my favorite
I
time.
I do, yes.
Oh, and by the way, you guys just announced the days you're going to be in Florida. I go into first spring training for the first time in my life in the same weeks.
Nice. So, really? When are you down there?
The 11th through like the 14th,
yeah.
I think.
We will be there, 10th to the 13th.
So we will see our fat faces.
We will see you in West Palm Beach.
And I will introduce you to 2030's top MLB prospect, my kid.
Oh, nice.
So,
nice. Love that.
Listen, I think, look, guys, this is just a classic sports talk radio where we're trying to read people's minds. I don't think that we've really given this kid a fair chance. I think he was probably a little bit disgruntled because Jay Gruden, his first coach, literally wanted nothing to do with him. And I think that is part of the reason why maybe he wasn't staying and, you know, being this football rat that Grant describes. Maybe he just didn't feel like it was reciprocated by the coaching staff, because it was pretty clear that Jay Gruden didn't want to draft him and had no intention of playing him in the regular season unless it was an emergency. So there are two sides to that. I think he has matured over time. And let's keep in mind, this is a very, very young guy. He didn't play a lot of football in college, doesn't have a lot of experience. He's got some maturing to do, but that doesn't mean it's impossible or that it won't occur. And I slightly dispute the idea that you need to be eat, sleep, and breathe football all day to be successful. Yes, for some guys like Peyton Manning or Tom Brady, that's what works for them because they don't have the natural talent that other guys do. But, you know, I don't think every quarterback is going home and watching 10 hours of ESPN at night.
I don't know about 10 hours of ESPN.
Thanks, Chris.
And I don't do hard and fast rules. I'm sure there will be a guy or there has been a guy who didn't, quote-unquote, love the game. But I would tell you, and I'm going to say this definitively, I'm extremely confident in this, at that position, not other positions, that position, the more you love the game, the more you're thirsty for knowledge about quarterbacking, the more you're hanging around people like Mike Shanahan and name that coach who's been in the game for 30 years and you're spending a week with them or you're going and hanging out with John Gruden and you're asking a million questions, the better off you are. Period. Now, it doesn't mean that you can't overcome. It doesn't mean
I'm sure there are rules, right?
If you don't watch one
exceptions,
NFL game
rather.
All season long because you don't care about watching the games, it's what you do for a living, you could still be really good when you take the field. I'm sure of that. I just think it would help. That's what I'm saying. Grant and Danny on the fan, Dave Jagler. Speaking of spring training, the latest on the Nats at 1:30. Next, a goalie won an NHL game this weekend who's not in the NHL, but is just a 42-year-old guy who was at the game as a fan. That actually happened. We'll explain.
And here he comes, number 90 for the Carolina Hurricanes is Dave Ayers.
Dave Ayers. What a story. Welcome back, Grant and Danny. 106.7 The Fan. The Carolina Hurricanes lost both of their goalies to injuries on Saturday night, which left Dave Ayers to come into the game as their emergency third goaltender. Sounds kind of cool, and it's even cooler that he stopped 8 of 10 shots in a 6-3 win to help Carolina get a W in an NHL game. But here's what's more nuts. Dave Ayers is not an NHL goalie.
Nope.
Dave Ayers is not an NHL player. He never has been. He is a 42-year-old Zamboni driver and basically a practice goalie who watched the first period of the game in the stands with his wife. Minutes later, he was out on the ice in a National Hockey League game. So here's the crazy, wacky third goalie rule in the NHL that makes no sense. In the NHL, teams dress two goaltenders and typically would, if there's an injury to one of those two guys, call up a minor league player in an emergency situation. So you occasionally, very rarely, but you will occasionally see like a third goalie is with the team because a guy might be ill or isn't feeling well, or they're not sure if he's going to be ready to go. So in that event, if a guy's not 100%, they'll just scratch him that day. They'll call up the third goalie from the minors, and they'll have two capable, healthy goaltenders to make sure that they're never in a situation where they go through two in one game. It would literally then take two injuries in game to goalies to get to the third goalie. The thing that I'll never quite understand how we got here, it's very antiquated, but it leads to these unbelievable stories once every several years, is that teams, because they dress these two goalies, do not ask a player on their team to be the goaltender in an emergency situation. But instead, there is a rule in hockey where if you lose the two goalies in the game, at every arena, there is a requirement that an emergency goalie is on hand for either of the two teams. So in Toronto on Saturday, that goalie was named Dave Ayers. He's the 42-year-old Zamboni driver who, whenever he's in the arena, he is the emergency third goalie. In the event that two guys get hurt, he has to go in. So the way this works is...
And it's for either team, by the way.
Either team.
That's what's so weird about it.
They have to basically provide one for the visitors as well. Exactly. But the way this works is you just watch in the crowd. You get a ticket to go to the game with your wife. When a goalie gets hurt, you then have to report to a location with an NHL official. So he goes down to the locker room where the one goalie got hurt. That's Carolina. And he just sits and watches and gets basically half-dressed and half of the padding and everything watching on TV, knowing you're never going to go in. Because it's extremely rare that a goalie gets hurt in a game. Might happen two, three, four times a year. It's even more rare that two would. So there have been a bunch of times in his career where he's been the emergency goalie. I can't imagine he's ever even had to go down to the locker room to start getting dressed. But I'm sure if that happens 80 or so, 90% of the time, you still don't go in. Lo and behold, he's watching the game on delay. Someone comes screaming down the hallway, get dressed, you got to go in. Because a second goalie got hurt. He got to go into the game at 42 years old and play in the NHL. He gave up goals on his first two shots, and then he made eight saves down the stretch into the third period. I mean, the Hurricanes played an incredible period in front of them. They were obviously doing everything they could to help this guy out. But he ended up on record as the winning goaltender for the game.
Yeah.
Absolutely stunning story and a lot of fun. But it's one of those things where I love when this happens. I mean, Ayers, the backstory is, you know, his hockey career was derailed because he had a kidney transplant 15 years ago. I don't even know if we should have this story because it just seems to me like in every other sport, if someone gets hurt, someone on that team has to fill in for them.
They don't bring in the guy from Section 220 to be the emergency catcher because he caught in high school.
You would just have a left fielder catch.
Yes.
You would just have someone on the bench has to put on the gear and go catch even though they're not good at it. And it's going to be really bad because there's going to be a bunch of balls going to the screen because there's going to be wild pitches galore and everyone that gets on base is going to steal second and steal third and maybe steal home. It's going to be embarrassing for everyone, but you don't just bring in a guy who caught in college who's your catcher and the Mets catcher at Nats Park that night if you have two catching injuries.
Yeah, I'm 40, so am I the emergency catcher for the Nationals Marlins in April? It's ridiculous. Now, here's the thing. I can fully acknowledge it because of this quirky, stupid rule that shouldn't exist. How cool is it for this guy? This is the greatest thing ever because he didn't do anything wrong. He's just showing up to the arena like he always does. He's going to watch some hockey, slaps the pads on, has an NHL win. Now he's going to get money donated to to the charity of his choice for people that need kidney transplants.
One of the best sports stories in years.
Nothing but good for him, and I don't begrudge him at all. I could put that aside for a second and go, this shouldn't be. I mean, this is so weird that it's the only sport, and it's not even close, that has anything like this at the highest levels.
If
right?
teams are allowed to dress and play any available goaltending option, which is why local goalies with ties to the team are often on call, emergency goalies are available to either team, which explains why Ayers suited up for the Hurricanes despite being a employee of the Leafs, basically. That's who he does some practice
He drives
stuff
the Zamboni.
For, and he drives the Zamboni at the arena. Just nuts, this whole story.
Like, it's amazing for the guy. And again, it's he should get to live this out because that's the rule. If it's me, though, I'm changing this rule instantaneously.
You do lose this story.
You're right.
And there was another one kind of like it a couple of years ago, not to the extent where the guy came in and played this well.
He got in the game, yeah.
But he was with the Blackhawks. I don't remember his name. He made like 11 saves or something. And it was the same kind of deal. It was this wacky thing where this
Scott
guy.
Scott Foster,
thank you, Tommy, was in like pickup hockey.
Mm-hmm.
The night before, literally.
Yeah.
Like, playing beer league hockey with his buddies. And there were these great videos the next night where they had another game, and he got called into United Center to be like the backup goalie, the backup to the backup to the backup. He got on the ice, and they're all standing around. They stopped their game, and they're watching him at this rink as their buddies in the NHL.
Yeah, the guy they're used
like
to taking shots on.
Like Vince Papale with the Eagles back in the movie Invincible.
I mean, you know, if John Wall sprains his ankle, I don't want a 42-year-old to run the offense. You know, like there's just nothing like this. And while it's cool for the individual, again, I don't begrudge any individual for taking advantage of it. I think it's ridiculous. This is an outdated vestige of a time that's long gone.
So you think...
an NHL player should play in NHL games.
You think, let's just use the Caps as an example. Assuming this were to happen to the Capitals, like Radko Gudas should just put on the gear and go get in net for the rest of the game.
Yes.
Almost like a position player pitching in baseball.
Exactly like that. Or catching. That to me is the best comp.
Yeah.
Like the emergency catcher for the Nationals was Brian Dozier last year, wasn't it? I believe I remember seeing
her
at some point.
Because sure.
Like somebody left the game, and I remember, and Hoshi, the emergency catcher for the Nationals, is actually Brian Dozier, who has some experience. So I give me that instead of the dude from the seventh row. It's so weird to me that this is allowed. And again, it's also super cool for the
guy.
This
would be the equivalent of if like someone from the grounds crew.
Yes.
Because he's the Zamboni driver.
Yes.
Like the head groundskeeper just puts on a uniform and goes in and catches.
Starts stretching out, doing the armbands out in the bullpen just to get himself loose.
Coolest story ever, though.
It is amazing for that
guy. We would lose that. And we don't have a lot of these, but the possibility for them is always good.
This is true.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. Speaking of the Nats, Dave Jagler calls their games right here on 106.7. You will hear from him from West Palm Beach next. It is that time again. Baseball is back. Spring training games are being played. The Nats are ramping up for a title defense. In 2020, Dave Jagler went down to West Palm Beach this weekend and was on the call of the first action on the radio of Nats baseball since they won a World Series, and he joins us now on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Jags, just hearing your dulcet pipes, my friend, lets me know that it's all going to be okay soon.
What was wrong? I mean, are you feeling down? I mean, they're the champions.
They are
the reason to be down.
It's a good point.
No reason to be down.
I just needed baseball.
You're up. You're up.
I needed to see
the
Soto shuffle. I needed to see Max carrying luggage around the mound. It's been a little while, is all.
Fair enough. Now, I mean, I didn't even get to do any play-by-play that first night. I mean, they did two innings and then it rained, so I had to wait an extra day as well. I was a little bit down about that. That was kind of a waste.
Big build-up, flight down to West Palm, and you could have just hung out and listened to Charlie in the living room at your wherever you're living these days. Yeah.
We got to do an hour and a half rain delay, Phil. So that, you know, we hadn't said anything on the air in 4 months. We had a lot to say, so we filled the rain delay, and then ultimately they canceled the game. But yesterday was beautiful, great weather, and a good atmosphere. A lot of red down there. I mean, even though the Saturday game was an Astros home game, technically. The red outnumbered the orange, and Nats fans are down there in full force. It's pretty cool to see.
Jax, what's your biggest question about this group in spring training, just in terms of the roster that's going to come back north?
Third base. I mean, that's got to be, right? Because that's the whole linchpin to how the roster is going to be constructed, whether Carter Kieboom makes the team and is the starting third base. Now, he only makes the team as a starting third base. I mean, you're not going to have him on the roster to not be the starter. So if he makes the team and is the starting third baseman, then your bench is Asdrubal Cabrera, Howie Kendrick, and Ryan Zimmerman, probably Michael Taylor as the fourth outfielder, and then your second catcher. So there's no open spots for anybody to crack the 13 position player mix unless there's some sort of injury. If Kieboom doesn't make the roster as the opening day third baseman, then who's that going to be? Is it going to be Cabrera, who was the Rangers third baseman yesterday, last season, didn't play a lot of third base with the Nationals, obviously. Could Castro play some third? Is Kendrick going to play some third? So that's going to be kind of a revolving door if Kieboom is not able to win the job.
Jags, the one thing no one seems to really be talking about with Carter Kieboom is what if he has a pretty good year? I mean, let's say he gets off to a hot start in the minors. Like, I don't think it's crazy. He's a high-end prospect who is tremendous in AAA. People are overrating his struggles in the big leagues. What if he hit like 269 with 24 home runs in the big leagues this year? You're right about third base being the big question, but to me, him starting to take that job and running with it is the only true chance they have to really making sure their offense doesn't take a big step back, because otherwise you're just piecing like 11 guys together to replace Anthony Rendon.
Well, I mean, that's a fair point. I mean, to me, the concern for Cuboom has always been defensively. I mean, you can't draw any conclusions about the 10 or 11 game sample offensively with what he had last year. His struggles were defensively, and now you throw that, you compound that with he's going to play a position that he's played very seldom. He only had like 10 or 11 games there last season. So let's see how he handles this position defensively in the spring. I think the organization is confident that he's going to hit. And is he ready to hit in the big leagues yet? Maybe. We could potentially find that out as soon as this season. But how does he handle it defensively? I mean, that's where the Nationals were so strong, was defensively on the left side of the infield last season. Now, you can't expect him to walk in there and be Anthony Rendon, but he's got to make the routine plays and just play a solid big league third base. If he shows he can do that in March, to me, the job is his. And then you're right. If he can give you those kind of numbers, you'd be happy about that. Now, where does that come in the lineup? It probably comes down in the lineup. You're not going to put him up there in Rendon's spot or giving Soto protection. That's the other issue, is how does the lineup construction play out depending on who the third baseman is? Where does Robles hit in the lineup? If you're trying to put Robles at the top of the lineup, then maybe you're moving Turner down a little bit. If you keep Turner there, where does Robles fit in that mix? There's a lot of questions to be answered as to how the lineup's going to go. And I think ideally they want to keep left-right balance, considering the new rules. With the three-batter minimum, you're not going to want to stack left-handed hitters consecutively. No one's going to be looking to do that. So the lineup construction is going to be something to watch closely this spring as well.
Dave Jagler with us here on Grant and Danny. You hear him when the Nationals play right here on 106.7 The Fan. Jax, who's going to hit third? Kind of speaking to that question. That, to me, is the biggest domino that's got to fall. Yep. Maybe it's Soto, but then it means maybe it's Trey Turner hitting second if you want to keep Turner eating 1-2. Starlin Castro, I think, is a candidate if you buy his second-half renaissance for the Marlins last year. Who's going to major in that three spot?
Well, I mean, just for the point I made about trying to split up the left, if you believe in the philosophy that you put your best hitter third, then it should be Soto. And whether Eaton's sitting second, then you'd live with, okay, Eaton and Soto are left-handed hitters back-to-back. Well, what if Thames is in the lineup? Is Thames going to be your four-hitter and you're going three hitters consecutively? So if it's a right-handed hitter, then ideally maybe Castro can take that. Like you said, the strong second half with Miami. I don't know that I'm buying the whole Robles first, Turner third thing yet. I mean, let's see if they try it this spring how it looks. I mean, Robles has got up that on-base percentage a bit. And to me, you're taking a bit of Turner's speed away from him by hitting third because of maybe some hesitancy to steal with Soto being in the batter's box. And, if you steal second, then you open up first base for him to be pitched around. To me, it's still the lineup clicks best when Turner is one and Eaton is two. So then you've got to make that decision. Do you stack the left-handed hitters together and put Soto third, or does some right-handed hitter take that mix with that most likely candidate being Castro? Because if it's not Castro, then is it Kendrick when he plays? Is it Zimmerman when he plays? Whoever it is, then that person's not going to be there full time. And then every day you're trying to mix and match in what is a pivotal spot in the lineup. And I don't think that's a tenable situation either.
So I think everything you just said is right. What I would do is I would go Eaton 1, Turner 2, Soto 3, just to break up the lefties. Mm. Eaton can bat lead off. I love power in the two-hole anyway. I just wonder, it seems to me like they really want to move Turner down in the order, having lost the power, and they feel like he could hit 30 home runs. I just don't get why 30 home runs batting leadoff or hitting second isn't just as good. I mean, it's not like we have to think about this like it's 25 years ago, and if you hit 30 home runs, you have to be in the cleanup spot or something like that.
Call me old-fashioned, but do I want Trey Turner hitting 30 home runs? I mean, to me, I'd rather hit 20 home runs and hit a bunch of line drives and ground balls, get on base, and use his speed. And if you're hitting third, does he try to muscle up and hit 30 home runs? I don't know. And the other thing is, along the lines of what you said, if Turner hits second and Soto hits third, you have that same dilemma of if Turner steals in front of Soto, are you taking the bat out of his hand? So, if Turner does hit third, then Robles has got to be—he's got to have a big improvement as far as plate discipline and on-base percentage. Because if Eaton's second and Turner's third, well, Robles is the only candidate to hit first, and a 270 on-base percentage is going to kill you at the top of the order. So hopefully he takes a big step forward. If that's the direction they go, he needs to draw some more walks, get that batting average up, and maybe he provides some of that speed element that if Turner doesn't run as much, maybe Robles runs more.
Dave Martinez is going into the third year of his deal, and Dave Jagler is with us. He's going to be calling every one of the games he manages in. But you're hearing just in this discussion, by the way, Jags, that Martinez has those decisions to make as it pertains to the lineup. But also, you were referencing the infield. I mean, there are so many bats and so many options and bodies for so few spots. Just to keep all these guys feeling good about themselves at the plate, this might be a more difficult managerial gig than last year going in.
Yeah. Again, that depends on if Keboom is the guy at third base. Now, I'm not saying let's say Keboom is the starter. Maybe he plays 135 games instead of 155. But if Keboom is your third baseman, you know, Turner and Castro are pretty much everyday guys. I mean, Castro played 162 last year. Turner played every day except for the games where he wasn't on the injured list with a broken finger. So you have one spot, and that's first base. And you have Thames from the left side, and you have Kendrick and Zimmerman from the right side. And then where is Asdrubal Cabrera playing? So you're right about that. That's going to be an interesting mix. But I think with the veteran presence you have there, I don't think Zimmerman's looking to get 400 at-bats. He's spoken about that. And you're trying to keep Kendrick from wearing down, and Cabrera is an older player too. So those things have a way of working themselves out. If somebody gets hurt, then something opens up there. Maybe there's some at-bats for Thames in the outfield at some point. And, you know, if there's a day off for Eaton or something like that. Those tend to work themselves out, but it'll be a question he has to constantly answer. Why are you playing this guy today? And, you know, Zimmerman hasn't started in 3 days. How are you going to get him a day? That is going to be quite a task for him to fill out a lineup card.
Yeah, a lot of juggling. Zim was on with us, but better to have
too many options than not enough.
No, totally. No doubt. Remember, Zim was on with us, and he said 300 at-bats. You know what? I both looked at each other and went, wait, what?
Yeah.
It was eye-opening,
yeah,
but I know. It's crowded. I know. But Jags, baseball is back on the radio. Thank goodness. Appreciate the time, brother.
Okay, guys.
Listen to Dave Jagler all season long right here on 106.7 The Fan. We will hit the leftovers and consider the best of the rest that we haven't gotten to yet on Grant and Danny next. With you until 2 today on Grant and Danny. Big news out of the NFL Combine, which is just getting underway. Officially starts tomorrow, I would say, but there are measurements ongoing and everybody of the quarterback groups and some of the position groups showing up in Indianapolis since last night. The big stories are twofold. Number one, Chase Young, extremely relevant to the Redskins. Number two overall pick projected to go to Washington as of right now. The Redskins trade out of that spot to another team and they draft Tua Tagovailoa, the Alabama left-handed quarterback. Then Young would probably fall a spot to the Lions or perhaps fourth to the New York Giants. He's not going to do anything at the Combine. He is going to show up.
Would you?
Shake hands, kiss babies, talk to doctors, get medically checked out, and basically look really good in a suit and sit down for some interviews with teams. He will do nothing else. There will be no spandex. There will be no sprinting or jumping or running. And the answer to your question is no,
there
I would not.
There is nothing he can do to help his case right now.
Why would you do anything? Why run a 40? Why drink a 40? Why hang out with a GM? Show up, sit in your hotel, tell them to come to you because you don't have to go to them.
I'll be in the lobby at 4:10.
Exactly. No, I wouldn't do a thing. You're 100% right. I wouldn't lift a finger. I put in my work. If anyone's got any questions, refer to them to the game film. Or if they've got a question about my character, I'm happy to sit down and talk to them about off-field stuff.
There's a great Chappelle Show sketch back in the day where no matter what he did, he discovered that he could plead the fifth. And he answered every question. And that's what I would do if I was Chase Young. I would just go, game tape. Next question. And they start talking. I go, that's great. Game tape.
Well, Marshawn Lynch style.
Game tape.
He's just here not to get fined.
Game tape.
He had 21 tackles for loss and 16 and a half sacks last year at Ohio State.
The Ohio State University.
Now, there are plenty of guys that have mega seasons, right? One of them is playing for the D.C. Defenders. They've got a linebacker named Scooby Wright. Name sound familiar at all?
No.
Finished ninth in the Heisman vote as a sophomore at Arizona years ago. He had basically the same numbers as Chase Young. This was a crazy season. I don't know how this happened, by the way. I'm going somewhere with this, so follow me for a second.
Okay.
But this guy named Scooby Wright, as a sophomore at Arizona, had this unbelievable year. Get these numbers. Ready? 31 tackles for loss, 15 sacks. Coming off the edge.
31 tackles for loss, 16 sacks. Wow. That's pretty similar, right?
Basically better than Chase Young, kind of. So he did this as a sophomore. The next year, he only played 3 games. He had 3.5 TFLs and 2 sacks. And he ended up being a late-round draft pick, and he hadn't been able to stick in the league. But my point is, like, that guy should go to the combine and should show off all the measurables the next year after having some baggage, because you got a lot of improving you can do as far as draft stock goes. You're not being drafted in the top 5. Chase Young has the numbers to go along with the measurables, to go along with the fact that everyone knows he's the second-best player in the country to Joe Burrow. Are you going to go ahead of Joe Burrow if you have a great combine? Bet you you're not. The only thing that could happen is you could end up going third or fourth because, let's say, someone trades up and takes Tua Tagovailoa. And then you're getting surpassed maybe by one or two more quarterbacks. There's no defensive players getting drafted before you. There's no non-quarterbacks getting drafted before you. There is no reason for him to do anything. So I think he's making the right decision.
Yeah, the worst case is that he slides to three or four, but he's the number one defensive player off the board, right? I mean, or maybe the second. Maybe if somebody falls in love with Okuda. But the point is, he's already this transcendent prospect that has done the work. It's already accomplished, dude. You've already got people comparing you favorably to a guy that at times dominated in the Super Bowl in the younger Bosa brothers. Is it Nick or Joe? I get my Bosa's confused. It's Nick, right?
Nick Bosa, 49ers. Joe Bosa, Chargers.
Joey, L.A., Nick, San Fran, Chase, probably D.C. So, yeah. I mean, that's...
Chase Bosa?
No, Chase Young, D.C. I just named the first names of the guys.
But Chase Bosa.
He may as well be a Bosa brother.
I hope he is.
He may as well be.
So, I'm looking at hand size measurements for quarterbacks.
Give them to me.
Other big story of the day. Very, very sad to tell you, Danny. I thought Joe Burrow could be something. You know, I've been driving the Joe Burrow train since early in the season.
I was digging Joe Burrow
before it was cool.
You're more Grant Burrow than you are Cleveland Browns Paulson at this point.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that. Joe Burrow, 9-inch hands. So I thought he was going to be good. I was wrong.
There's no point.
I thought Joe Burrow was a special weapon and a talent for the Bengals who could change everything.
Why even have a draft?
It turns out Joe Burrow is going to be a bust.
So can't do it.
Everything I said about Joe Burrow, I take it back.
All?
The ability to see guys come free before they do, the touch and the accuracy and the mobility within the pocket and the athleticism and the ability to run and get down and avoid contact.
Yeah, that affects his legs too, right? The ability to slide around.
His hands are only 9 inches long, Dan.
Bummer.
I'm guessing they measure that from like the base of the palm to the fingertip on the middle finger. Is that what they do?
You actually caught me on this one. I don't know what they do.
It's got to be, right?
I don't know what they're doing. Are they doing like pinky to thumb? Because that's what's going around the ball?
Like wingspan
you know
of
what
a
mean?
Hand?
Yeah. Hand span? Is that what it is?
Turns out, though, there will be at least one quarterback worse than Joe Burrow. Jake Fromm. Little itty-bitty hands.
No. Jake Fromm?
Little cute, tiny little hands on Jake Fromm. 8 7/8 on his hands. So if you thought Joe Burrow was a bust, wait till you get a look at Jake Fromm from Georgia.
Poor kid's got no chance.
Is he even going to be able to complete a pass? What do you think? I mean, seriously, is he going to be able to spin the NFL football enough to get it across the line of scrimmage? He's only got 8 7/8-inch hands.
Well, the best player I see here is Brian Lewerke. Lewerke?
Michigan State. Lewerke. Left-handed, by the way. That's a big left-handed palm.
That's 10 5/8.
I mean, maybe he's not left-handed. Maybe I'm thinking of somebody else. But he did go to Michigan State.
I don't know who that is.
You should. He's a Michigan State stud. He's going to be the next great thing in the NFL.
10 5/8 hands. Fart noise.
So we're drafting Lewerke then if we're running an organization.
Lewerke.
Wingspan too, man. 75-inch wingspan on
him. Oh, nice. Very good.
You know, that matters for like defending the post and being a quarterback.
Paxton Lynch, 10 3.
TheFanDC.com for our podcast. If you missed anything, thanks to Tommy and Brendan. Great thanks, man. So long.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.